理课堂听 class.com
Studio Classroom is on the air. Today we're talking about how to overcome stage fright so you can have more confidence speaking publicly. Hello everyone, this is your advanced program here at Studio Classroom, and my name is Troy. I'm your host on today's program, and we are continuing with our business article on the topic of stage fright. And we know that all of you probably at some time in your life have had to give or did give a public presentation, and yet you felt this sense of anxiety, performance anxiety, or stage fright anxiety. And yesterday we looked at the four most common fears about public speaking, and today we're going to look at four ways we can overcome or better manage those fears when asked to present publicly. With me today on the program are two very fine young ladies. I call them young. I think by comparison with my age, maybe they're young, but they're certainly very mature, and they're very probably good at public speaking, I would assume as well. Anyway, they're very good behind the microphone. So with me here in the studio today is Esther and Amy.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, everyone.
So glad that you're here. Now, do you have mic fright at all, Esther?
Yes, I do. I'm very afraid of speaking in front of a microphone, and that's something I'm trying to overcome.
And I think you're doing a very good job at it. We're so glad Esther is working here at Studio Classroom. She does a lot of jobs that some of us are really incapable of doing because she's fluent in Mandarin Chinese and in English both.
She's amazing.
She's amazing. And also with us is Amy. Hi, Amy.
Hello, everyone. Glad to be here.
What is your job here? I know that you are editor, right, of the Let's Talk in English magazine?
The assistant editor, that's right. We all wear many hats, so I've actually written for all three of our magazines. I edit a lot of the articles for Advanced. I'm on the program, obviously, sometimes, as well as the other two programs sometimes.
And sometimes you are asked to make public presentations, right?
That's right.
In fact, next week or in 2 weeks, Amy is going to give a presentation with Dr. Doris Brom at a conference for teachers.
I see. Well, that will challenge you probably. I know that the first time I did public speaking, how I felt, and this certainly won't be your first time, but it will be a challenge for you in that venue anyway to stand up in front of those teachers and to speak professionally and with confidence.
That's true. It's a formal setting and that can be intimidating.
Can be. And there are some situations where I'm asked to give a speech and I feel very confident. In other situations, I feel a lack of confidence. Well, today let's find out some effective methods we can use to control our stage fright by beginning with today's reading in your Advanced magazine on page 33, reading down through line 9.
Once you have identified your fears, begin working to manage them and let them help you. One effective method you can use to control stage fright is visualization. In the visualization process, you picture yourself in front of an audience, composed, confident, and in control. By picturing yourself in a successful situation, you will be able to give yourself the confidence you need to achieve your goal.
All right, so once you have identified your fear or fears, then you can begin working to manage them and let them help you. We mentioned yesterday that we can channel our energy or the energy that we feel when asked to give a speech. Usually it's excitable or excited energy. We can channel that into our speaking. So one of the effective methods we can use to control stage fright is what, Esther?
Is visualization, which is to form a picture of something in your mind. To visualize, to picture something in your mind. So before you actually give your speech, tell yourself or close your eyes and imagine yourself giving your speech and doing a good job.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Amy, have you ever visualized? Perhaps you weren't asked to give a speech, but in other situations, I visualized before.
I don't think I have, actually.
And I think there is a bad form of visualization, but I think I've used this method before.
When I played sports in high school, in track and field, I would visualize myself finishing the race or finishing the course, and it helped me.
Mm-hmm. Because in a sense, you're rehearsing what you're going to do before you've actually done it. Okay? So the writer Marjorie Brody, she's internationally recognized as an expert on motivational speaking and career enhancement. She says that the process of visualization is to picture yourself in front of an audience. And how should you picture yourself, Amy, when you are visualizing?
You should picture yourself as composed, confident, and in control. And to be composed means that you're calm.
Hmm. Okay, and what does it mean to be confident?
To be sure of what you're saying.
All right, and in control?
That just means that you're not letting fears or your situations control you, but rather you're the one taking charge, you're the one giving the speech, everyone's listening to you.
So you're actually picturing yourself in a successful situation.
Mm-hmm.
How do we tend to picture ourselves before we give a speech?
Sometimes we imagine ourselves making mistakes. Sometimes we imagine our fears coming true.
Yes.
But she's suggesting it's a lot more helpful to imagine yourself doing well. Because whatever you, when you think about something, that's kind of like rehearsing it in your mind. And so if you're rehearsing making a mistake, you're more likely to make a mistake. But if you mentally rehearse doing well, you're more likely to do well.
Now, I know this is all well and good, and we're telling this to our listeners because we know that they struggle with stage fright or public speaking as much as, you know, another person, anyone. We all do. On the other hand, when I tend to visualize, my weaknesses come into my mind, and I imagine myself doing the thing I'm afraid I will do because, sometimes when I publicly perform playing my trumpet, it's something that I have more confidence in now than I did years ago. And years ago, when I would try to imagine myself giving a trumpet performance, I would hear myself squeaking notes, missing notes, forgetting the notes because I would be playing without music. I supposedly had memorized it, you know. And I had. I just was afraid of forgetting what I was supposed to play. So in my mind, I would try to visualize playing all the right notes and still I would have these incriminating thoughts, these thoughts of, you know, blowing it, literally, no pun intended, but making a big mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what most of us would tend to visualize, getting up there, being composed, confident, and in control. No, we tend to visualize the mistakes that we'll probably make. And that only creates more fear, doesn't it?
That's right. So she gives us four rules that will help us control our fears.
Okay, well, let's then continue with the reading on two of the first four rules.
The following four rules will also make controlling your fears easier. 1. Arrive early. This gives you a chance to relax, survey your surroundings, make a trip to the restroom, organize your thoughts and check the facilities and equipment you may be using. The speaker who rushes in at the last minute does himself a disservice. We all need the time to mentally prepare ourselves for the event at hand. 2. Eat lightly. Avoid heavy meals, alcohol, and anything that might cause stomach upset. Bananas are a good choice. They are light and filling. It is also important to avoid taking decongestants or other medications that might make you drowsy.
3. I would say that the suggestions that she is giving to us here, by and large, are common sense.
That's true, but there's things that people sometimes forget to do. Common sense isn't always as common as we wish. And I know I've seen speakers who arrive late and then they're nervous, they're rushing around, and it's hard for them to kind of collect their thoughts and give a good speech. So this is very good advice, very practical.
Okay, so what does arriving early do for the speaker?
It gives you a chance to relax, survey your surroundings, and make a trip to a restroom if needed.
Okay. And I think she's putting that in there, a trip to the restroom, because that's something that often occurs when asked to speak publicly or do anything that might make us feel nervous or afraid. You know, it's like, oh, I've got to go to the restroom. You know, I've just got to go there now.
That's true, and it can be a big distraction if you don't get a chance to go.
Yes, it can be. So you need to arrive early. Now, surveying your surroundings is important. You need to look at the environment in which you're going to speak. Is it a large place, a small place? Is it comfortable? Is it dark? Is it bright? Is there sufficient seating? Is it comfortable? So there are different situations that when you are asked to give a speech, you need to get there early enough to decide how best maybe to approach that situation by surveying your surroundings.
In addition, she also writes, you need to organize your thoughts and check the facilities and equipment you may be using.
That's true, and checking equipment is important too, because you can really ruin your speech if you're, you know, doing the speech and all of a sudden you realize that the overhead projector isn't working or something and your visual aids are gone or whatever. So it's very important to make sure that your equipment is there and in order and that you know how to use it.
Yes, or worse, if the batteries in your microphone are dead.
Oh, that would be terrible. No one can hear your speech.
Yes. And she said at the top to give yourself a chance to relax. Now, this seems obvious. Obviously, that's one of the reasons to arrive early, so that you can just take some time to arrange everything, arrange your thoughts, arrange the surroundings, relieve yourself. But maybe you need to take some deep breaths. That's a good form of relaxation, just to breathe in deeply, filling your lungs with air. And then slowly expire, breathe out, breathe in. Now, I've told this to my speech students or those that I have taught speech to in the past, that they need to deeply breathe in and then breathe out, relaxing as they exhale. And so by doing so, they'll be able to calm themselves down. All right. Now, you just mentioned something about the speaker who rushes in. Amy.
That's right, that the speaker who rushes in at the last minute does himself a disservice. And a disservice is something you do that causes harm, that has bad effects. It's an act that may seem helpful, but actually does harm.
Okay.
So a speaker might think, oh, you know, I'll just kind of take my time and do other things first. But then when they actually get to the place late, they realize that they have harmed themselves by not giving themselves the chance to properly prepare for their speech.
So in English, we might say, you know, you do yourself a disservice and you do your listeners a disservice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so we all need the time, she says, to mentally prepare ourselves for the event at hand. What do we mean by the phrase when something is at hand?
What's happening? What will happen?
Yeah, very soon. It's suddenly upon us, isn't it?
And she says here, to mentally prepare ourselves. I think it's important if you're going to give a speech, ask what kind of audience will be there. Are they working professionals, mostly women, men, students? And then maybe you could even adjust your speech accordingly.
Sure. And sometimes if you don't know your audience when you're preparing your speech, then maybe you would need to do that, certainly, as soon as you arrive. I think in most cases, you would know the audience you're addressing, and so that your speech would be prepared to address that particular audience. Now, what is the second thing mentioned here that would help a person to effectively control their stage fright?
Eat lightly.
Now, why is that so important? How can that help you control your public speaking stage fright?
Well, I guess if you eat too much, or as she said, if you drink alcohol or anything that might cause stomach upset, you won't feel as well. And sometimes if your stomach is too full, you're less alert, and then you're not thinking as quickly as you need to do a good job.
Especially if you're giving a speech in the afternoon, when the body tends to go through a phase of downtime. And you tend to feel tired around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah, don't eat a heavy lunch.
That's true. And you also might have the opposite problem. I know I do, that when I'm nervous, I don't feel like eating. But if you don't eat anything at all, then you might feel more weak and dizzy if you get nervous. So I think you should eat, but eat lightly. As she says, bananas, for example, are a good choice.
Okay. So bananas, any other kind of food a person might eat to help?
I like to eat a small sandwich or fruit, maybe even nuts.
Okay, sure. Something like that. I think what you do need to avoid is perhaps eating a lot of meat or even a lot of starch, like breads. Anything in the bread family, I think you need to avoid that because starch turns to glucose in your system very quickly. And then your body releases a chemical called insulin. And insulin, interestingly enough, does make you feel drowsy, kind of makes you feel sleepy. So avoid potatoes and bread and other kinds
noodles,
of starches.
Pasta,
noodles,
rice.
Pasta, rice, exactly. Eat fruit instead. Something, she says, like a banana.
And she also says it's important to avoid taking decongestants or other medications that might make you drowsy. And decongestants are a type of medicine that helps you when your nose is stuffy.
All right. So something like pseudoephedrine or other kinds of decongestants, they tend to make a person feel sleepy. And now if you have a cold, you may need to take a decongestant because if you don't, you'll need to blow your nose. And that's probably more offensive in many ways than, you know, appearing sleepy.
That's true, but you can find non-drowsy cold medicine. It's medicine for people who have a cold that will not make you tired. So if you're going to give a speech, that's probably the best kind of medicine to take.
Okay, so the word drowsy here just means you feel sleepy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of weak. Okay, so let's continue then with the reading, points 3 and 4.
Three, stretch. Simple stretching exercises are another great way to help you relax before your presentation. They can be done just about anywhere, even on an airplane. 4. Use humor. Laughter releases endorphins, so it's a great tension reliever. Take some of the pressure off yourself by using interactive techniques. When you begin your presentation, ask audience members a question and get them to raise their hands. This will take some of the focus off you and put it on them. Perhaps the most important way to address and manage stage fright is to speak frequently. The more you practice, the better your speaking will become.
All right, we've already talked about the first 2 points or methods that you can use to control stage fright. We said you need to arrive early, and secondly, you need to eat lightly. Esther, what is number 3?
Number 3 is stretch.
Okay. And you mean stretch what?
Stretch your muscles.
Okay. I thought maybe stretch your mouth, you know, if you're going to speak publicly.
You can. You know, I've seen all kinds of different stretching and warm-up exercises. When I was in choir before we sang, our choir director would have us stretch our mouths and our faces and, you know, get your whole body relaxed and warmed up and flexible before you speak.
Good idea. So she says simple stretching exercises are a great way to help you relax before your presentation. I mentioned, you know, inhaling and exhaling, breathing air into your lungs and slowly out. In fact, within Asian culture, that's a very common practice, slow breathing exercises. So I think it's something she says here can be done anywhere. You can do it at the place where you're giving the speech. You can do it on the airplane if you're on your way. I suppose you could even do it in your car.
Probably. You just need to find kind of a quiet, private spot where you can do it without attracting a lot of attention.
That's right.
Well, she doesn't actually mention the kind of exercises you can use, but at least it does show us here a picture on page 34 in your Advanced magazine. There's this fella at the top who is stretching, it looks like, his arm. And probably that would be a good way to expand your lung a bit, too.
That's true.
Okay. Well, what is number 4.
Number 4 is use humor.
We all like to laugh.
All right. And, you know, I've seen humor well done. It would depend on what you're, you know, laughing at or laughing about. So I think a person would need to be careful not to express political jokes or gender-specific jokes or other kinds of jokes where a person is being put down or something, a politically sensitive issue is being raised.
That's right. We need to be politically correct.
Well, it might be important to laugh at ourselves, that if we're making a joke, we might want to tell a joke on ourselves. And I think people can often relate more quickly to us if we're willing to share and be vulnerable about who we are. Sometimes people think, wow, the speaker just must be a perfect person. Otherwise, they wouldn't be asked to give this speech, right?
That's true, but I think if we are willing to share about ourselves and joke about ourselves, it grabs people's interest because people like to laugh. And I think it also helps to make a bond between you and your audience, that they'll feel like they know you and then they'll listen more.
Mm-hmm. So open up, be vulnerable. Talk about yourself. If you find something humorous to laugh about, do so. Before I give a public speech, if I have the opportunity to laugh, I look for that. I do, because it helps me to relax if I can laugh. Now, sometimes laughter makes people feel more afraid. They feel like a situation is out of control. But actually, I find that it really feeds my energy level and helps me to let down and relax.
That's right. And she writes here, because laughter releases endorphins, which is a chemical produced by the brain. It reduces the feeling of pain and can affect emotions. It makes you feel happy.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. And it says it's a great tension reliever.
Wow.
And a tension reliever is something that reduces or gets rid of stress, strain, or pressure. So, you know, you can help everyone to kind of relax.
You know, at the end of the day, sometimes when I have, you know, had a difficult day, I will feel a lot of tension. And sometimes the best way I find to get rid of that is to find something humorous to laugh about. Most of the time, I don't even need to look very far. Something will happen, you know, between my two daughters, or it will happen in the home, and I'll just start laughing. Sometimes my oldest daughter doesn't like that. She'll say, "Dad, why are you laughing? What's so funny?" And so, you know, sometimes I'll remark something she did or something she said, and often she will laugh along with me. And I just find that it's a great way to relieve tension. Esther, I think you probably feel like having a good laugh right now.
Yes.
Are you feeling a bit of tension?
Yes, because okay. I have mic fright.
Okay, you have mic fright. All right. Well, if we can come up with a good joke, maybe we can help you laugh a little bit.
But I'm overcoming.
That's right.
Okay. So laughter releases endorphins, that important chemical produced by the brain that affects your emotions, helps you to feel more relaxed. It's a great tension reliever. And what's the meaning of the word tension reliever, the phrase?
It's something that reduces or gets rid of stress, strain, or pressure.
Okay. What are other tension relievers?
Exercise may be a tension reliever.
Mm-hmm.
Or stretching, as she mentioned earlier.
Okay. For some people, eating is a tension reliever.
Mm-hmm.
Sleeping.
Or reading.
Or hugs.
Listening to music. Okay. Taking a walk.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, she says, take some of the pressure off yourself by using interactive techniques. When something is interactive, what does that mean?
That means that it's not just one person talking or doing something, but they're involving others as well. I think this is a great tip, that if an audience is sitting there and just listening to the speaker, they're more likely to get bored. But if the speaker asks the audience questions or finds other ways to interact and get the audience to do something or say something too, the audience will feel more interested and more involved in the speech.
Okay. Well, we've heard about computer programs that are interactive,
mm-hmm.
which simply means that, again, you can affect the way the program operates by doing something. And in this case, you can interact with your audience to include them in your presentation. So what does she say or provide for us as a way to interact with our audience?
She writes, when you begin your presentation, ask audience members a question and get them to raise their hands. Get them to respond to you, to interact with you.
Okay, so what, you know, you might simply ask, how many of you here have had this situation happen to you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, will you please raise your hand? And then you can count hands, or you can say, well, I see that most of you have experienced this in your life. All right. And sometimes that can also help your presentation because you've just now presented a fact.
That's true. And I think also sometimes you can take it a little further and maybe you know, if you have people raise their hands, then call on one of them and say, well, tell us about it. What was your experience? Mm. And that person might give a short answer. And I think that helps to break up the presentation, too, because if you listen to one person talking for a long time, that can also get boring. But if other people talk as well, that keeps the interest level high.
Okay. And the writer Marjorie Brody says that when you do this, it also takes some of the focus off of you and it puts it on that person.
That's right. I think at Studio Classroom, if you've ever had an opportunity to hear Dr. Doris Brom or any of our other teachers speak, we like to do this a lot. And Dr. Brom is very good at doing this. She will ask the audience questions and play games and sometimes even give them prizes.
Mm-hmm. So we need to interact with our audience. It's a way of breaking up the presentation and relieving tension. Well, now let's listen to today's skit.
Well, Archie, today's the big day. Are you going to impress the boss with your speech?
You bet. I'm confident. I've been preparing for hours.
How so?
Well, just that. I got here really early, so I'd have hours to prepare.
Cool. What else have you done to prepare?
Well, I did some stretching exercises so I won't be tense.
Cool. Great. Hey, do you want to grab some lunch before you give your speech?
I can't. I read somewhere that I should have something to eat before I speak. I did, and I don't think it helped.
Why? What did you have?
3 dozen bananas.
Good. Now we have one other thing for you on today's program, today's highlight.
Identify your fears of public speaking. Visualize yourself as a confident public speaker.
Very good. And I would like to add just one more point, and that is speak frequently. Give yourself more opportunity to practice. So the next time someone asks you, will you make a public presentation? What are you going to say?
Yes, I will.
Definitely.
Okay. I might even say yes because I have to. All right. Well, until next time, this is Troy.
This is Esther.
And Amy.
Saying goodbye.